Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Okay, you're very welcome along to Friday Night Rugby with Brian O'Driscoll. And we're going to start with the news, Brian, that the game between Wales and Scotland was postponed. I think everybody can get behind this decision. It seems like absolutely the right thing to have done a little bit late in the day, but the right decision made at the end is still the right decision.
Yeah, I suppose better late than ever. I think it was inevitable that that was going to transpire the way that, you know, every sporting event across the globe seems to be shelved or put on hold or diverted to another point. So it absolutely made sense that the rugby should follow suit. It was amazing that it actually had gone on so late in the week prior to it being pulled. But yeah, common sense prevails, and everyone's in this together. You realize the magnitude of what's happening. We're living in a very, very strange time, an unprecedented event that's occurring that we don't know, as to where it's going to go. So I think it's so important, from a health perspective, that everyone pulls in the same direction and that we're all trying to sing off the same hymn sheet. And it made, for a simple decision in the end that the game was pulled.
Yeah, it is really important that everybody is singing off the same hymn sheet. We seem to be singing off a slightly different hymn sheet from everybody in the UK and certainly everybody at Cheltenham as well. So let's just wait and see what the impact of they walk amongst us.
It's mind-blowing. That's absolutely, it's bonkers that we've had, that there's been 4 days of it. I don't know, I've read bits and pieces and seen a bit of social media and people are giving out about it, but for the most part, it doesn't seem to have made that huge headlines. And you think about, I don't know how many Irish were over there, or, I presume people are flying in from everywhere. It's one of the big horse racing events on the calendar. So the hub of activity and the cross contamination that's going on by standing next to people watching races is very real, and no doubt there's going to be implications off the back of it. But listen, it's done now, and I suppose those that are involved and we as a collective have to accept the repercussions that come from that.
Yeah, and deal with it. I think that's going to be a developing story over the next couple of days as details emerge of exactly what has happened there, and as people come back into the community. It always seems a little bit weird when events of such global magnitude are happening to be talking about sport. And at the same time, in a couple of weeks' time, when the full absence of sport from our lives begins to have an impact, we will begin to realise just how much we miss it and how important it is as something that is a social glue, and also just a way for us to talk about things and to be distracted from the news cycle.
100%, and we take it for granted. We just you look at the amount of sport that's being cancelled. So we're not even aware of how many events and how much is going on, be it at a professional level, be it at an amateur level. When you look at, kids underage being cancelled, training sessions being cancelled, sport is an integral part of our existence. Certainly in Ireland and part of my existence, Saturday morning going down to, my kids' football and gymnastics, all of those parts are just the makeup of your week, and they're a staple, and it's something that you look forward to. And only when it's taken away from you do you realize what an important component it is to your existence. So, yeah, from our perspective and from everybody's perspective, I hope this process doesn't go on longer than we anticipate it might, because it really is it's a key component plugged into people's everyday or weekly living, where they get refuge from work or from family or from whatever issues they might have, and they're able to vent through their sporting team, through playing themselves, through going to the gym, and it's such a vital part of society. So it's tricky and strange and weird times.
It is, right? And again, it always seems weird. I just have to keep going back to that. And I don't want anybody to think that we're trivializing what's happening. Part of me feels like, and I was conflicted about this the whole time, but taking sport off means that there is no distraction now, that we're all on social media and it's constant scroll, and it's going to be watching the 24-hour news cycle on TV, where unfortunately the news is measured in statistics, and those statistics are grim, and they're going to get increasingly grim, particularly as what happened in Italy begins to happen in England and in America and here in Ireland. We've seen the graphs. The graphs in every single country are exactly the same. So there's no flicking over to the NBA. There's no flicking over to even an empty stadium of football or the golfers. And it's going to be very hard to get any of that sport back on as, unfortunately, the statistics get worse and worse.
Yeah, I think the responsibility comes with broadcasters at the same time to showcase, you know, some of the better times, some of the better games, some of the better events that have gone on in the past. We all love a bit of nostalgia. Why not plug that back into the psyche a little bit, where we're able to remember great times? And yeah, there is so much negativity going around, and you look at any of your news apps, you know, every COVID-19 covers 70% of what you're reading, and it's impossible to break away from it. So that little bit of escapism needs to come via memories, fond memories of the past. And I think, well, do you know what? Broadcasters are going to have to do it, because they've got lots of live events that aren't going to take place. And you know, Off the Ball is no different, that we're going to have to talk about great times that have gone on in the past and try and entertain people and get them their opportunity to switch off from the doom and gloom for a little while, by highlighting some good times that have been and gone.
I'm hearing an episode per cap of your entire career. So that gets us like 140 odd episodes, right?
There was a couple of crap games in there too.
Full episodes, I'm telling you. No, I mean,
I want to skate over them.
It might
have been capped, but they were brutal memories. 60-0 in New Zealand. Don't know if that deserves a full episode.
Oh, come on. That would be absolutely perfect. We could reunite the starting 15 from that one.
I'm just going to bag Paddy Wallace for that one, where he got pulled from the beach and brought and plugged in. That was Paddy Wallace's fault, that one.
He has an excuse, I think. That's a fair point. We actually did do a Classic Games Club last week for the for your hat-trick game, and so we all sat and watched it on YouTube. It's great. The game.
It was lovely reliving it, and reliving it through other people and through, I think through, you know, the highlighting some of the performances. I was lucky. I got good plaudits because I managed to get three tries. But geez, when you go and win as a collective in France, you know, everyone has to have played really well. And some of the real standout performers that perhaps didn't get the kudos and the headlines, that then subsequently got it through your conversation, was so nice to listen to. The quality of Malo Kelly's pass for the first try, Dennis Hickey's tackle on Mark Del Mazo from beyond left field, from left of left field, and then those other moments of, you know, Humps having to knock over that important penalty with 10 minutes to go or whatever it was, all those moments are so nice to relive. And thankfully we got some other decent games to call back in more recent times: the Grand Slam 2018, the All Black game 2018, or in Soldier Field. So there's no shortage of good ones to recall, but yeah, it was nice to be part of that conversation and just hear it from other people's perspectives, because the age profile of all of you was so vastly different than listening to it. You know, was it Neil was saying that he was 7 or 8 years of age, which is somewhat sickening, but it was kind of a cool thing to get to listen. And I forwarded on to Dennis and to one or two others saying, you got to listen to that. I also did enjoy, you only have to turn the match on for 30 seconds to see one of Dennis Hickey's sand wedge left foot shots absolutely hoofed in right off the corner of his foot, like going nowhere. I was like, there it is then, you have that one patented.
Yeah, and he had hair, of course, as well, so it was definitely a different era. The other thing, just like while we're bringing up the scrums, I don't know if you remember just how wild the scrums are. There's just this kind of massive surge of fighting.
They were class. They were so good. It was like you barely waited for the referee to tell you to set. It was like you did it on your own accord. And it was ferocious. It was like, how far back can you actually stand from one another to really get that hit? It was just a different time. And I've said it before that the rugby bio that we watched from the 80s, we're fast becoming that rugby bio. And it seems like obviously the game that I started in 99, 2000, that French game from the one I left even 5-6 years ago was crazy different. But even the step on it's taken in the last 5-6 years is a different level. So the evolution of the game is so vast. So it's nice looking back on those and think they were wild times. I saw one ruck at one stage and Mick Galway piling into it, and he couldn't have cared less where the ball was. It was literally just trying to identify bodies on the ground and what sort of level of rucking he could achieve within those bodies. It was such a different time.
Yeah, it was class. If anybody hasn't seen it, it's up on YouTube, and our Classic Games Club is available on podcast as well. We've got plenty more of those type of things to look forward to over the coming weeks and potentially months. Just to go back to the point that we started with and all this, though, like, at the end of this, we're all going to need a lot of healing, and we will need to be congregating in crowds, and we will need to be watching sport and grassroots sport and getting people out again. We're a long way away from that, and I don't want to, again, rush any of this point, but just for us all to kind of pause as this goes along and remember how important sport is. Like, it is, there's that quote about, of all the things that don't matter, this is the most important. There's various people have been credited with saying it. They were talking about football, but whatever your sport is, like, there is a reason why it captivates so many people, and we give up our free time to watch grown men and women running around chasing the bag. It's because we love it, and there's a reason why we love it, and that's because it brings us together in very important ways.
It has an ability to unite like nothing else. And the two things that you look at in society that have an ability to pull people together are music and sport. And we can enjoy them in unison. Of course, you have your own side to support. So in many ways, that might be a contradiction because, it builds and it fuels not a hatred, but a kind of
proper rivalries.
Proper rivalry, thank you. Against your next door neighbor, or you look at Liverpool, red or a blue and so on. But at the same time, it's still a passion for the sport, and it has an ability to be able to thrill you and sadden you and bring you through the range of emotions. And there's not many things that bring such huge joy to you like that you can do with everybody, with your granny or with your son or daughter, or you can enjoy it as a collective. You can enjoy it as a family. I'm with you. We're obviously talking on a sports show about it, and you don't want to make light of the seriousness of the corona, but at the same time, it just shows the importance of what sport provides in society and to us.
We're definitely going to miss it over the next while. I do want to talk about a little bit about the stories that have happened this week in terms of the disciplinary hearings that happened. Joe Marler obviously didn't win in his case that this wasn't a red card offence. The body of rule that it was a red card offence, and they've ended up with a 10-week figure for the ban here. About right? Is it important that they did?
Like, it's really hard to put a number on it. You might think that 10 weeks might be quite severe for someone that wasn't doing it maliciously, that he was doing it from my point of view, I wasn't appalled by it. I just thought it was a really stupid thing to do in considering the time that we now live in. You would see lots of rugby head saying, it's nothing. And I get that, because, if someone did it to me, a bit of you would be annoyed, but you realize that he wasn't trying to, I don't think he was trying to provoke Alan Wynne-Jones. I think he was looking for a cheap laugh, or maybe he'll defend himself saying he was looking to defuse what could have been a serious situation. But he went about it all the wrong way, and it was really, really stupid. And I'm not surprised that they've come down relatively hard on him, because you just can't be seen to be grabbing someone's genitals on a rugby field, whether in jest or not. And so what is it, 12 weeks reduced to 9 because of his guilty plea plus 1 for not having particularly good past behavior on previous counts. So I don't know. You could have said 5. You could have said 6. People say 12. I don't know. Is it right? It does seem balanced against the French props 3 weeks. It does seem extreme when you can compare one punch in the face versus a guy, grabbing someone in a, I'd be careful to say jovial, but in a jestful sort of way. I don't think there was any malice in what he was doing. I don't think he was trying to provoke him. I just think he got it completely wrong, and in the wrong environment on the biggest stage, and he's got to suffer the consequences of it.
Yeah, let's talk about how England approached that game, will we? Because you put it in context of the France game and the general sense of how England have been refereed. You put this in the context of what Eddie Jones said before the France game, where he was talking about being brutal, and his team do bring a brutality. Like, they absolutely are existing on an edge. That was the performance that they wanted to have earlier in the tournament. They probably had the World Cup hangover to get out of their system. There's a cost from how the team thinks of themselves and behaves, and that stereotypical English arrogance is back. Like, the cost is that you give away a lot of penalties, or you should give away a lot of penalties. If you think of Owen Farrell.
Well, if your captain's doing it in this whatever the 6th or 7th minute, and I'm a really big Owen Farrell fan, but I have to say, looking at he gave away a couple of penalties in the first half, particularly that one. You know, if you're looking to your leader to behave that way and set the tone that way, what do you expect of the rest of the side?
This was on George North, just in case anybody's not familiar. We're talking, he kind of, it's like a taunting penalty, essentially.
It was more than a taunt. Like, he gave him a good shove in the head. George North tried this leg because he knocked the ball over the line. And straight away, Farrell's lying on top of him, and he slapped him on the head. And I had a couple of pints last weekend with Dennis Hickey, and we were talking about it, and I think he absolutely nailed it when he said this type of sledging and head patting is our diving, is rugby's diving, and it's a bane on the game. And I think if the referees don't get hold of it very quickly, it's going to run out of control. And you can't stop the back slapping and players running in from afar, but I think you cannot make contact with the opposition in any shape or form. And I think it was a Ben O'Keefe, it took him seconds to reverse the penalty. For me, that's an immediate penalty reversal. And if you're slapping someone on the head, they've got to start considering putting someone in a sin bin for it, because that's the only way you're going to eradicate it. And it annoys me a lot. I think it's a problem in the game. And if you're having the England captain do it, well, the knock-on effect is you're going to have other guys reacting stupidly as well, as we've subsequently seen with Joe Marler and one or two others. So, it's the tone is being set badly early on in games. And that balance between being fired up and having the sense of control is lost, with certain personalities. And that's why, there's been question marks as to Owen Farrell's temperament. I thought he'd completely controlled it, but then he has outbursts like that, and it makes you question it again, whether, he's the guy to lead that team forward.
Who does that come from? Does that come from Eddie Jones, or does that just have to be something he works on himself? Is it a pair of the minute?
Yeah, it probably comes from the top, and I'm sure he's probably fueling them throughout the week about not taking any backward step and not being bullied and not being picked on in their own back garden and so on. And all of that builds throughout the week, and eventually, you're unleashed, and your first opportunity to kind of vent should be in a collision. Maybe for Owen Farrell's case, he didn't get that shot, and so all of the verbals throughout the week come out in a head slap. And it's, you look at England, it was a knock on to it was going to be a knock on for Wales, so it would have been a scrum 5, and then it's a penalty. I can't remember what came of it. Did they kick a goal from it? I think, but like that could have had huge ramifications, and that's right at the start of the game. So I think World Rugby and referees need to get hold of it. And probably Nigel Owens is the only one that will not stand for that sort of thing. And he's properly against it. And I think he's driving it in his refereeing the way it should be refereed, because it seems to really piss him off more than it does other referees. And he wants to stamp it out immediately and eradicate it. So, whether it's expected of him or not, he often penalises whenever he sees it.
Farrell did that, and then I think it's about 10 minutes afterwards, he's chasing the Gary Owen and he just hooshes Dan Bigger out of the way. And then there's a third penalty in the second half where he lies on the wrong side of a... he makes a tackle and then lies down. Yeah. He's like, oh, what am I supposed to do? You're supposed to get out of the way.
You know what? On those tackles, when you tackle a particular way, you know that you run the risk of if you tackle someone in a particular style, that you're going to be stuck on the wrong side. And that's a mentality that you choose to enact that tackle that way. And so the knock-on effect is, oh, no, you can't have your cake and eat it. So if you're going to tackle someone, pulling them, dragging them down a particular way, you do have half a second to bounce immediately onto the opposition side. He chose not to do that. And then he can't hold his hand up and say, oh, they trapped me in or I couldn't get out. It's, you know what you're doing as a player. You've a clear eye line on what way you can stop them and how you can slow that rook ball down, particularly when they get in behind you. He chose not to bounce immediately and offer them quick rook ball. And that was a penalty I think he was willing to give away and then plead innocence at the same time.
Yeah, it was an incredibly brilliant professional foul, but it is a professional foul. And the referee's like, oh, he's engaging with him then on a level which is a conversation because he's the captain, as opposed to going, get out of my way. That's like, you're lucky it's not a yellow card, because I've got you for the taunting, I've got you for pushing Bigger, and now I've got you deliberately lying on the wrong side. When Wales were making a break, it felt a little bit like... he's a celebrity and he's Richie McCaw level celebrity in the game, and he's going to be living like Richie McCaw now and getting away with stuff because he's the England captain.
Hard to send off the captain. It's not easy to send off the captain. And I think referees have to think twice about it when they do. It's a big call for them. Is that a brilliant idea why, the best teams in the world have the player that plays right on the line as their captain with New Zealand in Richie's case at number seven, opportunity to be able to run the risk as, more often than anybody else in that position. Yes, is it more difficult to send off the All Black captain? Undoubtedly. So you've got to play to your strengths as well. And maybe Owen Farrell is doing that a little bit and thinks that he might be able to get away with a little bit more than the rest of his teammates, but referees will eventually pick them up on it.
Okay, where are this England team? Have they recovered from the World Cup hangover? Because they were pretty powerful in that game, and although it ends up being close at the end, like, they were absolutely dominant.
Yeah, I think it looks as though they are back, even though they only won by 3 points. They have this insane power game that I don't know if many teams in the world can deal with, and we've seen it in different aspects. Maybe not for 80 minutes against Wales, but against Ireland, that was a power game that would scare you and frighten you, and that it felt like an age grade above 16s playing against 15s or 17s against 15s, and that's a concern from an Irish perspective. From, if I was an England fan, I'd be excited about the brutality and playing on that edge, because it's a fine line between that level of aggression and overstepping the mark. And they get it right sometimes and they get it wrong others. And someone like Manu Tuilagi, he's the perfect example.
Oh, looks like we're having some difficulties with our line there. Shit.
We've seen some huge collisions from him, but he doesn't leave much margin for error. And Stander, another massive impact. So, if he gets them a little bit off, he's going to miss big, and he did against George North.
Yeah, and that was totally fair. That was a red card all day long and twice on Sundays, right?
Yeah, I think it was. Sorry, I'm just going to move here slightly because I'm going to run out of juice, so I need to plug in. So Yeah, it was a red card. And anyone that said it was a yellow card or otherwise is not thinking straight, because he clips him on the head. It's with force. There's no arm cocked to try and make to make it a proper legal impact. So there's multiple factors working against him there, and I think as well your reputation does precede you. You know, if you've got previous in that regard too, and Manu has a little bit, it's going to eventually catch up. Like I said, the Owen Farrell thing might too. So. I don't think he can have any complaints. What is it? He got a 3 or 4 week ban. Yeah, probably seems right. It's funny. I don't see him changing his technique. And I'm sorry. I'm really excited. Again, I'm a Manu fan. I'm really excited about seeing the big collision there. But I think, you know, when you're looking for the big shots as often as he does, I think you're going to miss it every so often. And the only result is going to be, you know, you're going to be walking off the pitch.
So he's not going to change his tackle technique. Does he just figure, like, in my career, I'm going to miss a month a year, 2 months a year, and the that's the downside. The upside is that every team I play for knows that I'm a match winner.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think you'd think that way, but I think he likes, you know, he feels as though he can set down a marker for his team. And look at that Dan Bigger impact, right? When I talk about he was lucky, he didn't dip another inch or two lower. But the fact is he didn't, and it was an unbelievable shot. The hit on Stander was an unbelievable shot. The one on Larmer, in its, you know, much smaller man, in the Twickenham game before the World Cup, where he hit him on having just caught a ball, was a phenomenal shot. All of them spill the ball like that. That is the sort of impact that you're looking for from your player. But the reality is, if they're a little bit off, you're going to lose them for the game. And it was fine for England that it was only 2 or 3 minutes they had to deal without him, but that happens in the Dan Bigger moment. 2 minutes in, you know, you're playing against it with 14 men against a team that's then immediately galvanised by the prospect of you know, playing the opposition with a man down.
So Eddie Jones doesn't want him to tone that down. Other coaches might have a, look, we want you to play the full 80 minutes here, calm that down 5%, make sure you don't get sent off. Eddie Jones is like, ramp that up to 150% and I will back you no matter what happens.
Well, yeah, again, it's to do with the messaging that you get from different coaches. Some, you look at Irish teams under Joe Schmidt, how did we all of a sudden become a team that gave away somewhere between two and five penalties a game? It's kind of unheard of, because it was drilled about discipline. Don't give away a silly penalty. I'll pick you up on it early next week if you give away a silly penalty for doing what Owen Farrell did. If you don't roll away, unless you absolutely get stuck and you cannot, you know, get away, well, do you know what? I don't want to see any penalty count. So I think it is to do with the messaging that comes from the coach. And, you know, we saw Eddie Jones at the start of the tournament talking about brutality. Well, we've certainly gotten brutality from England, and it's worked well for them since they're upset against France. So why would they change? And playing on the line, playing on the edge like that suits them. But you're going to get a miss every so often. And Manu missed, and Owen Farrell missed, and Joe Marler missed, and, you know, and on other weeks that can really be made pay.
Yeah, well, look, this is probably the last conversation that we're going to have about actual rugby that's happened this year for a very long time. Plenty of stuff for us to look back to. If there's any specific classic games you'd like us to look back on, we're going to be more than happy to do that over the next while. And if you've got any Netflix recommendations for us, Brian, we are all ears right now.
Yeah, The Devil Next Door, I watched it, 3 episodes. It's all right.
Reasonable, says JP.
Like, grand. So I'm still on the, look, I think all the Black Mirrors, I don't think, except for the Miley Cyrus one, don't waste your time on that. But all, yeah, there was one with Andrew Scott in Black Mirror. I can't remember any of the names of them, but those Black Mirrors for an hour and 10 minutes. You know, I fly to London a lot, obviously, and, you know, perfect for those flights, particularly on the way back, where you don't have to do any work and you just want to, you know, switch off, they're fantastic. So for those people that haven't seen any of them, get on it. I think there's 3 or 4 seasons of it as well.
Do they not scare the bejesus out of you at the moment? Is there not like...
Some of them. Do you know what? I had a conversation with an old coach of mine. We were filming a documentary the other day, and he made a really valid point that the reason he reckoned the coronavirus is stressing everybody out is because we know everything nowadays, or we can find out anything. If you want to find out how to get somewhere, you look at Google Maps. If you want to find out any information on any individual, you look at Google. There's a way of finding out literally everything. So he thinks that's why the uncertainty of this is absolutely freaking everyone out. And maybe that's why on Netflix, the Stranger Things and these sort of shows are a big hit, because it's the supernatural. It's the element of the unknown that's, you know, waking up part of our brain function that hasn't been, you know, tweaked for a number of years because of what we're getting, you know, on a daily basis, because we know and can find out everything we want to know. Whereas something, that element of the unknown, is like, Jesus, can we actually get there?
Yeah, well, we're all going to find out over the next couple of months. Brian, great chats. Thanks a million, and stay safe.
Nice.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.